This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
Batman! Robin!
That's right. We're after some jewel thieves, but our car's been disabled. May we use yours?
Sure, hop in.
No, I meant we'll take yours and you stay here with ours. There might be trouble.
Well, trouble don't bother me none. But if that's the way you feel about it, take her and welcome.
Pretty wooden for superheroes, huh? Apparently one of Batman's special gifts is the ability to survive even the clunkiest portrayal, like the one we just heard from a 1949 movie serial. Right now, Batman Forever is triumphing at the box office. My guest Bob Kane is the creator of the Batman character and was a consultant for the new film. Over the years, he's watched the Caped Crusaders' continuing adventures with alternate pride and horror. Kane created Batman in 1939 and continued drawing him for DC Comics until 1966, the year the Batman TV series debuted. When he gave up drawing Batman comics, Kane started painting Batman on canvas. Kane created Batman a year after the debut of Superman comics. In 1990, he told me that the idea of creating a new superhero was initiated by his editor at DC Comics.
Well, I was having lunch with the editor that time, Vincent Sullivan, and he said he was looking for another superhero. Actually, Superman was created in 1938, and the period when I spoke to Vincent Sullivan was 1939. It was about a year later. And prior to that, I was doing fill-in cartoons for DC Comics and making maybe $20, $25 a week. And I asked Vincent Sullivan how much money the Superman artists were making, Siegel and Shuster. He said they were making $800 a week apiece. Now, in 1938, that was comparable to about $5,000 a week today. And I was kind of a poor kid from the Bronx looking to, you know, get wealthy and famous. So I said, hey, for that kind of money, I could create a superhero. So I went home that weekend, and I drew upon some of my early influences. And as I recalled, I was 18 at the time, but when I was 13 years old, I saw a book by Leonardo da Vinci, a book of inventions. And he had one book with a flying machine, an ornithopter, and it was a man on a sled with huge bat wings. And even Leonardo had a quote on that particular invention. It was the first man in flight, the first glider, actually. And the quote was, "Your bird shall have no other model but that of a bat." And it kind of initiated an idea to me about a Batman. And that was when I was 13 years old. So that weekend, I drew upon that influence. And there were movies I used to be influenced by as a kid. One called The Mark of Zorro, The Dual Identity with Douglas Fairbanks Sr. And that gave me my second influence. During the day, he was a board count in the Southern California in the 1880s, and at night he became a crusader fighting against the injustices of the dictatorship at that time.
Why did you make Batman someone without superpowers? I mean, he was a regular mortal who was very, very fit and very clever, but he didn't really have superpowers like Superman did.
Exactly. For one thing, I didn't want to emulate Superman and imitate it because I thought maybe they wouldn't want that. And I wanted to come up with something original, for one thing. And secondly, I felt that every person that doesn't have superpowers could relate to Batman a lot easier than they could to Superman. In other words, you didn't have to come from another planet to be a superhero. All you had to do was be born rich and build your body into perfection and have the urge to go out and fight crime. So most people like the idea that Batman never had superpowers. They can relate to him a lot quicker than to a superhero with superpowers.
Now, you said that his look, Batman's look, was inspired in part by the Zorro movie that you liked so much. Now, you were, when you were young, in a gang called the Crusading Zorros, and you used to wear hooded masks. What was the connection between the Crusading Zorros that you were a member of as a kid in the Bronx and the Batman look?
Well, to begin with, Zorro wore a mask at night to hide his identity, so that the desperados that he would apprehend would know him during the day if they saw him. Therefore, they couldn't retaliate. And when I was a kid, and living in the Bronx, we had these clubs, that we would all band together to protect ourselves against rival gangs in other neighborhoods. It was pretty tough in the Bronx at that time. And so we wore Zorro masks to hide our identities when we would raid one of the rivals' clubs and kind of beat up on them. And therefore, if they wanted to retaliate, Terry, they wouldn't know who to apprehend because we wore the masks of Zorro. It was a dual identity, so to speak.
Now, here you were, a Jewish kid growing up in the Bronx, right? And your superhero is named Bruce Wayne. I mean, what a very not Jewish name.
Well, it's an alliteration of Bob Kane.
Oh, okay.
Bruce Wayne. Well, alliteration. I wanted to be Bruce Wayne in my reverie and in my daydreams. I felt instead of a poor kid, I imagined I'd like to be a rich playboy and fight crime at night because I hate all injustices in the world.
Would it have been possible to have made a Jewish superhero, or was that out of the question at the time?
Well, only for the Jewish Forward, which is a newspaper in the Bronx. But that's the only paper that would take a Jewish hero.
Tell me why you decided to draw Batman in tights and shorts. Now, I know Superman was drawn that way.
Well, actually, it's called the Union Suit character. And for whatever reason, Superman started it, and it seemed to work. And mine was second, except I used a bat cape and the bat symbols, the bat mystique, which spread out into the bat cave, the batmobile, the batarang, and so forth. I used the entire bat mystique to create my bat world. Superman only had a telephone booth. So mine is really more merchandisable, so to speak, and also more mysterioso. Yeah. Somehow you enhance an idea. You begin with it. It's just a germ of an idea. And as I studied the history of comics in America, all the comics heroes were very crude at the beginning, and they developed along the way. Like Dick Tracy didn't have a two-way wristwatch when he started. That came along later.
You drew Batman for DC Comics. You stayed with that house. What are some of the pros and cons of doing a comic for a comic book house like that? Who owns the rights to the characters, for instance?
Unfortunately, that's the that's part of the negative part of the business, is that when you're young, you sell away your copyrights, and actually that happens with most of the cartoonists, and they own the character at that time, and I couldn't take it elsewhere. And actually, I was making very good money, and in 1940-41, I was making practically $1,000 a week. And so you're not about to leave, and $1,000 a week in 1940 was comparable to about $5,000, $6,000 today a week. And so being that they owned the copyright, I did the best I could at the time by compromising and getting a good piece of the action and a perpetuity contract. So therefore, I did rather well compared to some artists who sold it away and didn't get very much out of it.
Have you owned a piece of the merchandising over the years?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I do rather well.
I'll bet, yeah.
I mean, all things being equal, I'd love to own it, and I would have done 1,000% better, but I didn't do badly the way it turned out, and life is a compromise. If it weren't for the publisher, I probably, I never would have been where I am today. So, you know, one hand washes the other.
How did the comic book code affect you in 1954, and the code restricted content matter of the comics? And this was a period
For a while, what happened was whenever there's a successful industry, you generally have some sleazy fly-by-nights that want to cash in on it and on the coattails of anything famous. And so a bunch of these fly-by-night publishers came out with some really schlocky, if I could use that word, books that depicted sex that we never had, blatant sex, you might say, violence, cutting heads off with the blood oozing out, and they had bad grammar and illicit wordage and so forth. And so a lot of the whole industry suffered along the way with its sleazy books because a lot of mothers stopped their children from reading comic books in general, including the DC line and other books of our good caliber. So what happened is a code was set up, like in the early days of the motion picture industry, they had the Hays Office, which was a code of ethics of what you could do or what you could show or not show on the screen. If there was too much sex and violence, they cut down on that. I think a censorship is good to a degree, but if you have too much censorship, you take away the freedom of the press and the writer and the artist and so forth.
Were your freedoms restricted? Were there things that you wanted to do and couldn't do when the code was put into practice?
Oh, no. No, our books were never... We censored our own books, so we weren't under the fire of the anti-comic book people and the parents' associations and so forth. No, our books were always clean, so we had nothing to worry about. We just had to sit tight, and then we had a code, which the good comic book publishers created, and which had to have every drawing had to have a stamp of approval by the Comics Code of America, and then this knocked out the sleazy comic books only because they couldn't get the code of approval, therefore they couldn't get any distribution, so they stopped publishing, and they only interfered maybe a year or two, and then they all died out, and we went on our merry way publishing clean comic books as they are and have been all through the years.
There are still Batman comics now, yes?
Oh, sure. I mean, we have ghost artists. In fact, the new breed of Batman comics are graphic novels, and they're done with hardcovers. Some of them are $30 a book. Some are $25 a book, and they're done on beautiful paper. There's been a whole evolution since the days I created Batman for 10 cents a comic book. Now, Batman number one that I don't own, the 1939 book, the May issue of Detective Comics, has started in 6 pages, now sells for $50,000. There are only about 12 in the country, and I don't have one of them. I had them 1 to 100, but my first wife threw them all out when I got divorced. But anyway, one day I'll get number one back, I guess.
Bob Kane created the character Batman. Our interview was recorded in 1990. This is Fresh Air.